and Dibby.
On 95.7 The Game.
No Mark Willard this week. He'll be back in on Monday. It's Dan Dibley, Mark Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Getting into some Niners training camp. Brock Purdy's interceptions. Worrisome to you, 888-957-9570. We'll get back to that in a second, but I feel like I'm being coached up during the break, Dibs. If I won't spoil it. The match is still ongoing at the moment. But we got a little bit of beach volleyball at the Olympics. USA versus Canada. A fun match at the moment, but of course, your expertise in the sport of volleyball. You're telling me what's going through these players' minds right now in the middle of this match.
It's pretty exciting, and spoiler alert, LeBron James is actually there.
Oh, so no, how could you spoil that?
I know. It's midnight, 12:04 Paris time, and LeBron and his entourage among the only people who are actually there.
It is empty. Yeah, it's a shame because it's a great match.
It's a shame, third set, and I do appreciate the fact that a lot of these matches, games, events are stacked up until midnight so that we can at least watch them live here outside of prime time. I know it's 6 o'clock in the East Coast, but it's an afternoon delight here for us to be able to watch this. So it's fun. I've been trying to get in on the Olympics, but a lot of the stuff happens in the middle of the night and you can't fully watch it. But I am locked in on tomorrow, the first round of the women's 100 meter Sha'Carri Richardson in the first round, which is mostly nothing.
She'll dominate the first round.
Just make it through. Just advance. And then, you get to the semis from there and then the final. So I believe the track and field starts either today or tomorrow with some field events. And so usually the second half of the Olympics is when the track and field, the athletics, they call it, those events get underway.
Tracks, I think, is probably my favorite event at the Summer Olympics to watch. Those athletes. I mean, there's so many fun events. I love the hurdles, 110-meter hurdles, 400 hurdles. A lot of really good ones. I'm not as big into the long distance running, but those shorter, quicker ones and seeing those sprinters is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think we just had the marathon yesterday. The women's marathon, I think, was yesterday.
I did not see that.
Yeah, I thought I saw some road running with a clock about an hour and 48 minutes, and I thought, it's got to be the marathon.
That's incredible.
Yeah, anyway.
Or Katie Ledecky swimming for like 20 straight minutes or whatever that is.
Yeah, in the 1500. Yeah, which is the metric mile. And, she has the 20 fastest times in history. When you think about just pure dominance, whatever the team, whatever the sport, like Boston Celtics in the 60s when they won 11 of 12 or whatever, Katie Ledecky literally has the top 20 times all time.
And she's so far ahead of everybody. I mean, that stat spits it out. But if you're watching her, she's like lapping the field in an event like that. She's finishing on one end of the pool. Everybody else is out of the picture going the other way.
Right. Right. So you're swimming for silver, basically.
Exactly.
When you're in the pool with Katie Ledecky.
And you're swimming for like maybe the 30th fastest time ever because you're not catching her.
Right. If you PR, maybe you can make it in the top 30 all time, but the top 20 are all Katie. So.
God. Incredible. Incredible athletic feats going on in Paris right now. I'm not going to spoil anything else, but watch primetime at the Olympics to get caught up later on tonight. All right, back to the 49ers. 888-957-9570. Neither Dibs nor I are that worried by Brock Purdy's interceptions. I think he's thrown like 7 through 7 days of 7 practice days, but I think the vast majority of those have come the last couple of days. And of course, the first couple of days, you're not really like going against live defense. So you can take out really a couple of those days, but a lot of interceptions lately. I don't think it's freak out. It's a major red flag. The Niners got to rethink their quarterback position. Nothing that crazy. But there are some people out there, Dibs, who are a little bit worried. And if you are worried or if you're not, explain why. Give us a call. 888-957-9570. You can also hit us up on the Xfinity mobile text line, 888-957-9570. And we will ask Larry Kruger about this coming up in just a little bit. Larry will be on at 4. So in an hour, we'll chat with Larry on the River Islands guest line about this and a number of other things. I think one thing that is interesting to point out, Dibs, as it goes with the impending Brock Purdy contract extension that the Niners have been considering, not considering, but they've known that they've been going to have to do at some point when the time does come after this season. There's a lot of us out here And I think it's relatively logical to think, all right, well, when Brock Purdy gets that major contract extension, maybe it's $55 million, maybe it's $60 million a year, whatever it is, that's the moment where it's going to be difficult for the Niners to keep all this other great talent around. And also some of it is, I mean, you're getting up there in age with some of these guys. Trent Williams, who knows how many years he has left. George Kittle, certainly still very good, but on the back end of his peak at the very least. What happens when the 49ers, Dibs, are led by Brock Purdy without all this all-pro talent around him? And there are some out there who think, well, this training camp is a perfect example of that because there's no Trent Williams. There's no Brandon Ayuk. You don't have George Kittle in there every single play. And Brock Purdy, oh, suddenly throwing all these interceptions. Is this a look into the Niners and Brock Purdy's future without that all-pro talent once they have so much money tied up with Brock Purdy?
I don't think that this is a fair measurement for what the future will hold because of what I was explaining before about, you know, how you approach training camp as a quarterback. You're going to make throws that you don't normally make, and you're going to have defensive players who are breaking on the ball, and you're going to have offensive players who maybe aren't your number ones. And the big thing, and I believe this was mentioned before, when you are an offense, you're not game planning your offense for what the defense is going to be most vulnerable to. Right now, you are just running your plays. So offensively, you've got 20 plays in a session that you're going to run, and you're just going to run it. And, you know, Brock Purdy may get 8 or 9 or 10 of those plays, and then you're going to get your second quarterback and your third quarterback, and they'll get a few plays. Whatever the number of plays is, you're just going to run them. And these are the plays we're going to run no matter what the defense is putting out. And so the defense is doing the same thing. We're going to run this defense, this coverage, this front, whatever we're going to run, we're going to work on what we work on, and the offense is going to work on what they work on. So you might break the huddle, and you might get to the line of scrimmage and see a defense that is, oh no, oh Schmidt, this is not going to work out. But you're not going to audible. You're not going to change up your play. You're not going to scheme for what the defense is vulnerable against. And so it might just be a bad matchup. It's like the old card game War. I don't know if you played War growing up.
Yeah.
War is the most mindless yet fun game.
Which is why I played so much of it as a kid.
And I played it with my kids. And as a kid, I would actually play by myself because my siblings were older. And a lot of times I would just play right stack against left stack. And you turn the card over. And in training camp, it's kind of like the game of War where you break the huddle and you might have an 8 and you pull your 8 and the defense has a 9. Well, you lose. And the worst part about War was when you'd throw a king and then your brother or sister would throw the ace. It'd be like, oh, crap. Not only did I lose, but now you get my king.
Yeah.
And the other one was when, I don't know if you played this way, where you pull a 7, I pull a 7. Yeah. Now we have a War. It's 3 cards down and then the 4th card comes up and then... So, okay, we have an 8, each 8, card down, and then I pull a jack, and then you pull a 10.
And I flip my 3, and I give you an ace, yes, a king,
exactly,
and a jack, or whatever
exactly.
It is.
Exactly, yeah. So.
And then the game's over. I'm like, well, have to pack it up.
Just before Back to Football, we also played in our house with, we had a rule called two cards. When you had 2 cards left, you got to pull both cards up. And then only when you had 2 cards left, you got to make a decision on what you would play. So if you're the big
stack, make the smart decision. If you can win with your lower card, play the lower card.
So I have 2 cards and you throw a 4 and I've got a 5 and a king. Well, I'm going to throw my 5 and take your 4 and then I'm left with my king and then whatever happens, happens. But that's just a little bit of a Dibley family nuance.
Just to add a little quick aside to your little quick aside.
I love it.
What's the most number of times that you get the same cards where you flip the same card and you go 3 down and you flip again? You keep getting the same card on that third flip?
Yeah, overtimes.
How many in a row where that stack just keeps growing?
I think I got 3. Triple overtime.
I think 3 for me too.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever gotten 4.
I mean, that gets crazy.
It's like half the deck right there.
Exactly. And that's where you talk about it being game over.
It all changes on this one card.
That's right.
The whole game.
And then I throw a 3 and you have a 2 and it's like the biggest exulting win in history because I got 12 of your cards.
I'm just thinking back to so many like family trips and vacations playing War with my sister.
Especially. Exactly.
Yeah.
Good time killer.
Yeah.
But I do think the training camp is a little bit like War where...
I forgot even how... Yeah, explain this to me again. I don't even know how it relates anymore.
I'm going
to
run my play. So whatever, I have my 16 cards in my stack and I'm just going to play my cards in a row. And I'm not going to worry about strategy. I'm not looking at my cards, and I'm not thinking about what you have. It's just, this is what I'm running. And the defense, this is what we're running. And so I do think that Brock Purdy gets into a spot where, you know, it's not an ideal play. It's not a play call that Captain Laminated Play Sheet would have designed against the defense. It's more vulnerable to this, or maybe we can do that, or we're going to scheme this up. And my first 15 plays, based on what their defensive tendencies are, we're just running our plays. We want to practice these plays. We want to run these plays and see how they do. So sometimes when you do that against a defense, you're going to lose. And your quarterback is going to take a chance because it's practice, and he's not worried about his stats. So I do think that sometimes practice stats get blown out of proportion based on the circumstance of what they're trying to do.
888-957-9570. Purdy's training camp interceptions. Troublesome for you or no? Are we overreacting to something that, as Zibs is talking about, isn't really all that deep? You're just trying to get used to the speed of football, the physicality of football, and this isn't really game plan laden football at this stage. Let's go out to the phones. 888-957-9570. Up next is Mike in San Jose. Mike, what's up? You're on with Dibs and Grandy on Willard and Dibs. What do you think, Mike?
So, I'm obviously you don't like to hear your quarterback throwing interceptions, okay? But the thing is he's going to do risky things because he's in practice. There's nothing to lose. He's going to try to fit balls in tight windows. He's going to try to hit back shoulder throws when they ain't there. He's going to do those type of things right now, and I don't care about that. I care about the regular season. So, all he's got to do is protect the ball. That's fine, but he's got to take some risks at some point, and what a better time to do it than right now in preseason when you got one of the best stacked defenses. Now, I also need to know what kind of interceptions were they. Were they interceptions like a tip ball or something, a deflection? That means something, because if he's just straight missing dudes and other dudes are jumping his routes.
Oh, Mike, sorry about that. We cut you, or you got cut off there at the end. Your phone lost service. But I think we got your point for the most part, Mike. Thanks for the call. 888-957-9570. I think Mike's right. I mean, ultimately, as you've laid out, this is about trying and kind of testing your limits and what works and what doesn't work. And you're obviously being way more willing to try and take risks here that you wouldn't otherwise in regular season games. And Purdy has said as much. This is the time to experiment. Mike's also right. The kind of interception matters. We were talking about that a little bit earlier with Jimmy Garoppolo. We weren't necessarily using that to argue whether or not these interceptions in camp matters,
but
explaining how some of Purdy's interceptions last year weren't as bad as some other interceptions. So I think Mike has good points. And again, it's not that I disagree with you or Mike, just trying to provide, you know, play a little bit of devil's advocate here, because I think there is a portion of the fan base who still isn't terribly sold that Brock Purdy is going to be able to do what he did last year when you don't have the full complement of weapons that he had last year.
And I get that, but I don't know if that really matters for the next year or 2 years, because even if he signs a contract next offseason, and we all expect that he will, and it's 55, let's call it $60 million, and he gets $60 million for 5 years, he gets a $300 million contract, and $200 of it's guaranteed, and the guarantee at signing is about $145, whatever those numbers are, that doesn't matter until after next year, because the contract won't kick in next year. He might get some money up front in a signing bonus, but you'll still be able to have for the majority of the team to be able to come back. It's not until after that year where you really have to worry. So you got Brock Purdy for this year, and you got Brock Purdy for next year, making a relatively small amount of money. And then at that point, yeah, Brock Purdy's going to have to probably do more with less, unless you are hitting on these wide receivers. If Ricky Pearsall turns out to be a dude and he's on a rookie deal, and Jacob Cowing, fourth round pick, if he's a dude and you've got him in the fold, and I don't know what you'll do at running back if McCaffrey's still here, and if Trent Williams still around, and Debo and Brandon and George, you've got two more years to really worry about what else is around him. So I do think that sometimes we skip ahead too far in the future, worrying about things that we can't worry about. For example, you know, me worrying about when I'm going to cash out my Social Security. I'm 55 years old and I've got a 2-year-old. So I'm thinking if I could work 15 more years and I'm 70 and I cash out my Social Security, then what's that number going to be like? And what's that money going to be worth? And can I really make it happen with a 17-year-old and this and that? That is 2039. Right now, we're sitting here on August 1st, 2024. Can I even make it back to my car today? And so I do think that a lot of times we in sports media, we start to skip too far ahead. Right now, the only thing that matters is, can Brock Purdy do what he did last year again? Can they sign Ayuk? Can Trent come in? Can this team stay healthy like they did last year? And can they go on another run? Whatever happens after that with Brock's contract and all the rest of it, that for me is way further down the road.
I really hate that I'm sounding like the Brock Purdy doubter on this show right now, but I think I get everything that you're saying, and that's a problem for in the future if it even becomes a problem, and there's no guarantee that it even becomes a problem. But the reality is the 49ers will very likely give Brock Purdy a very, very, very rich extension after this coming season. And this coming season is going to feature, regardless of the holdouts right now, it's going to feature Trent Williams. It's going to feature Christian McCaffrey. It's going to feature Deebo Samuel. It's going to feature Ayuk and George Kittle. Those players will all be featured this year. And successful, not, you win the Super Bowl or not, you're not going to have the knowledge of knowing what Brock Purdy is like without that group of offensive weapons until after you already signed him to that major contract. And it could turn out to be the easiest decision in the history of the world. And I'm not suggesting the Niners shouldn't sign him to the extension. Of course they should. You're almost damned if you do, or sometimes you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. If the quarterback is good, you're not damned if you do. But if you don't sign him, you're damned if you don't, because you don't got someone else good enough to come in and fill that hole, generally speaking. But I think there is a little bit of reason to be worried that we don't know maybe everything possible about Brock Purdy, and you're taking a little bit of a leap of faith hoping that he is good enough to elevate everyone else around him on the roster after you don't have that kind of talent, because you're going to have to make that decision on his extension presumably before you see him without a number of these guys.
Yes, and I think that that's a fair way to look at it, but if you want to talk about what quarterback in the NFL is able to elevate the talent around him, even though he doesn't have that much talent around him, and you can start with Patrick Mahomes, and then I'll wait for who the next quarterback is who actually is able to do that, because Josh Allen this year is going to be charged with doing that same thing. You let Stephon Diggs walk in Buffalo, and so now Josh Allen's got a mostly unproven core of wide receivers and running backs and tight ends, and so now he's going to have to do that very thing. Cincinnati's got two guys who are highly paid, and your quarterback is making a boatload, and now Tua, you're making a ton, and you've got two wide receivers making more than $20 million a year. So what other quarterback is expected to do what we want Brock Purdy to have to do? And again, this is 2 years down the road. Right now, Brock Purdy making $1 million a year, or whatever the number exactly is, it's about $1 million. All he's asked to do is be a very good quarterback with a very good team. And if you do that and you get paid, and a couple years down the road, if you don't have George and Deebo and Brandon or Trent or Christian, okay, then it's up to Kyle and John to find young players to be around him, much like Green Bay has done. And I do look at the Green Bay model as one that, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm looking at Green Bay and thinking, huh, that's an interesting way to go about it. You let Davante Adams walk, or you traded him, and you use all your draft capital on wide receivers and tight ends, and now you've got four or five weapons on rookie deals to go along with your $55 million a year quarterback. So that, to me, is going to be the way this has to go, and I think that they've already started that process.
Yeah. 888-957-9570. Worried at all by Brock Purdy and his training camp interceptions? Maybe it's less about training camp interceptions and just more so how this offense is going to look in the future for the 49ers. 888-957-9570. Up next is Bobby in Los Altos. Bobby, what's up? You're on Willard and Dibs. It's Grandy in for Willard, so Dibs and Grandy with you. Bobby, how you feeling?
I'm doing well, thank you, guys. So first thing on the war, I believe on the three cards. I grew up on the East Coast, but I imagine war is a global game. We would say, I declare, and then you drop that fourth card with the war. You guys didn't really mention that, so maybe that's a regional difference, East Coast versus West Coast. But
I remember the I declare, and then on the fourth card, you would say war, and you would flip that card. Yeah, it wasn't mandatory, but it would, for me, it was more of a spiritual, rhythmic kind of a chant tweak to it. But yeah, thank you, Bobby, for bringing that home.
Yes, and then the best is when your last card was maybe a king, you got one card, and then a 3 seconds later, you have 20 cards, right?
Yep.
That's how it works.
It's a great comeback, yeah.
Yes, but look, first of all, in terms of how I'm doing, I'm not doing as well, and I am jealous of anyone that is worried about what Brock Purdy is doing during preseason, because you must have a really good life if that's your worry. Every season for the past, what, 5-6 years, all I think about is the NFC Championship game going to be at Levi's or will it be away? To think about preseason, it's not even a game. Not a game, not a game. We're talking about
practice. Not even preseason.
We're talking about training camp.
Thank you.
We're talking about training camp. And it's, I don't know. I guess just bigger picture, there's no way I would focus on that. I'm worried about the Super Bowl. I'm not worried about what's going on in training camp. Now, that being said, I think the Niners' best chance for the Super Bowl, unfortunately, was last year. This year, the rest of the NFC is only getting better, and we got to go all in and spend whatever we got to spend in order to be competitive for this year. And look, Brock Purdy, it's not like, you know, when he gets potentially the richest contract in NFL history, it's just because he was the next man up. It's really not to say that he's 30% better than someone that signed a contract 2 or 3 years ago. That's just market rates. I'm not quite sure why we're trying to figure out what the value of this guy will be 2 years down the road if he gets $300 million or $200 guaranteed. That's just, he was just next in line, and that's just how it is. The salary cap's increasing. It's always going to be like that. I don't really view him as them saying that, oh, he's the best player in the NFL. It's just that he had the next quarterback contract. So I don't really understand why anyone would worry about that. That's just the way it works. Tua, is he, you know, a top five quarterback? Probably not, but his contract was due, and so he got a big payday. The same thing with a Jacksonville guy, you know? I guess I just can't worry about salary cap and implications. All I can worry about is what are they going to do this year? And if they break the bank 2 years down the road, I don't care. I need to figure out how to get a Super Bowl in this window, which I think expired, unfortunately, probably last year. And this is the last chance.
Yeah, Bobby, I don't think it expired. But
yeah, I wonder why Bobby thought that. And yeah, thanks for the call, Bobby. For me, the Super Bowl window is still intact.
Last year might have been the best chance, but it's not like this year is a bad chance.
Exactly. And last year was the best chance because you were healthy. And if you look at like the injuries from Brock, Christian, Trent, Debo, George, and Brandon, they were almost non-existent. And so that was the key.
Other than that like three-game stretch in the middle of the year where you missed Trent and Debo and you lost all those games.
Fine. And I do think you were going to lose to Cincinnati anyway. And I Probably. Mentioned it at the start of the year. That was a scheduled loss.
Score one for the Diver.
And they were coming off of a bye, and you were at the end of 8 straight games going into your bye. That was going to be a tough game, and we could look at this year's schedule, and I could pinpoint the game or two that they're most likely to lose, even though they're favored in all 17. To go 17-0 is incredibly difficult, and it's actually only been done once. And actually, they went 16-0, the Patriots. They didn't even go 17-0.
True.
So it's never happened, so it's difficult, but I do think that the only reason why their window was more open last year than this year was because of health.
Yeah. All right. Join 95.7 The Game at Harding Park Friday, September 6th for the Pettinelli Financial Partners Golf Tournament benefiting the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Go to 957thegame.com to learn more. Presented by ATCO Pest Control, the Bay Area's locally family-owned pest control company. It's Dibs and Grandy with you in for Willard on Willard and Dibs. More coming up on the other side. Plus, Brock Purdy commenting on his contract in the future. We can get into that. We'll hear from Brock and more coming up next. 888-957-9570. It's Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Wibbs.
Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Mark Willard this week. He'll be back on Monday. Dan Dibley, Mark Randy with you on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. As always, we are streaming live on Twitch and YouTube. Head to twitch.tv/957TheGame and youtube.com/957TheGame to watch us live. Subscribe to the channel for all of our content on both Twitch and YouTube, and make sure to hit the thumbs up button on the YouTube screen if you like the show. It's all powered by First NorCal Credit Union, and also if you want another place to find all of our content here on 95.7 The Game, and you're currently watching on Twitch or YouTube, whip out your smartphone and scan the QR code in the bottom right corner of the screen. It'll take you to a page where you can download our free Odyssey app, and you can get all of our content there as well, including wherever else you get your podcasts, on our website, 957thegame.com. Again, the free Odyssey app, just search for the show you want, search for 957 The Game. All of it in a number of different places on YouTube, on Twitch, the app, the website, wherever else you get your podcasts. We are not difficult to find. Again, everything we do on YouTube and Twitch is powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Okay, Dibs, breaking down Niners training camp, Brock Purdy, and the big bad contract that's coming up for Brock. And I wanted to bring this I lost it. I retweeted it a couple of days ago, and I got to scroll through all my tweets to find it again.
A lot of tweets from the young Mark Randy.
Yeah, I was a little frustrated by what the Giants did on Tuesday, if you couldn't tell.
How you feeling now there, Mark Randy? After a Logan Webb gem. It was a Webb gem.
It was a Webb gem. I'll give you. I mean, that's
I'll
kind
take
of.
It too.
Yeah, I was
going to give it too. Telegraphed. I'll take it too.
And it's, you know, not new.
I think it's not, but
a lot of people have thought of that one before.
They have, but when you have a pitcher actually throw nine innings and get 27 outs, as I mentioned earlier in the week with FP in alongside Mark Randy and for Mark Willard, I think that there was, the number was 21 complete games across the entire league to date. And for Logan Webb to get one, and to get one when he needed a bounce back and they needed a win, that was a web gem. I'm going to give myself from a 2 to a 3.
You're staying at a 2 for me. We can average out on right, 2.5 right, between the two of us.
The Russian judge gave me a 1.
He was awesome last night.
Yeah.
He was just incredible. And they needed him to be incredible because the offense is just... Oh, God.
Don't dwell on the negative.
You're right.
As FP
trying to stay
saying,
positive here.
The only negative in last night's game was the length of game.
You went. You well, and
my
your son.
I didn't go with
him.
He went with a good friend of his. Yeah. I got him tickets, and he chose to take a friend as opposed to take the old man.
Wow.
Which is good. And you know what? Do your thing.
That's cold.
Well, he's 21, and, you know, when you're 21.
Nothing like a ball game with your old man, though.
Yes,
you know?
But you're 28, and so you're in a spot where now you've kind of circled back to where fathers, and you're different because I think you and your parents have always been super close from what you've kind of told me, but my son, we're close, but at 21, you have a chance to either go with a really good friend or go with the old man who's kind of a mouthy know-it-all. You go with your friend, and I
good
get
point.
It.
Yeah. Good point.
I mean, would you want to go with me or go with your dad?
Oh, of course, my dad.
Well, you answered too quickly. That was a little
before you even gave me the other option, I was already
no doubt.
I was already.
It was, you know, me or Lucas would be the real test because you know you sit with Lucas 20 hours a week.
Lucas in there right now. I can't even see him.
I can't see. Him.
I know
him
what
either.
Willard's talking about. Yeah, I can't even
totally.
See.
Totally.
He's not even. Oh, there's some movement back there. He's back there.
There's some movement.
Yeah,
anyway, the only problem, and it wasn't a problem, and I'm really being facetious, but. What was it, an hour and 50?
Hour 55, I think.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
I mean, that's so fast.
I remember one game I went to, it was 2010. My uncle drove up. He's in Santa Cruz. My uncle drove up, took me to do a game. And it was early into Buster Posey's like explosion onto the scene, 2010. So it must have, actually, it was probably around my birthday. It's probably why it happened. So it was probably in May, maybe late May, early June. I go to a game with my uncle, and it was Buster Posey was in the middle of, oh, he's this rookie. He's hitting like 400. He's in this crazy hit streak. He gets called up to the bigs, and he's just on fire. He's getting a hit in every single game. And the one game I happened to go to, the hit streak must have been, I don't know, close to 20 games or something. He did not start. It was against the Marlins. Ricky Nolasco was pitching, I remember.
Wow.
And I think Ricky Nolasco threw a complete game one hitter And the only hit was not by Buster because he did not start, but he pinch hit. He came in and got out. So not only did I see a game that didn't even last 2 hours before the pitch clock, but I also saw Buster Posey only get one at-bat and snap his hit streak to begin his career. I will always remember that game because it was the game I felt like I did not get my full due. I did not get what was owed me when I went to Oracle, at that point, AT&T Park, to watch a baseball game. So it's kind of similar to last night, although at least last night the Giants won.
Yeah, 1-0, and you know, you get to see a complete rarity in Major League Baseball, which was not only a complete game, but a complete game shutout. And Logan Webb got into a couple of jams in the first and then in the fourth, and you know, multiple base runners in those innings, and found a way to scratch and claw and make it happen. So much needed victory for the Giants in a spot for Logan Webb where he desperately needed to come through with a good performance.
Yeah. Yeah. We can get to that a little bit more coming up. I do have, I think, more to say about Logan Webb. He's just a gamer, and the game needs more players like Logan Webb. We got Larry Kruger coming up in 20 minutes to talk Niners training camp. And we've been talking a lot about Brock Purdy's interceptions at training camp, his big contract coming up. And I wanted to share this with you before we move on any further. This is something I saw on Twitter earlier this week, and this is from Tyler Webb. Tyler Webb on Twitter. It's a really good piece of information here. This is a list of the highest cap hit percentages to win a Super Bowl, and this is among quarterbacks. Generally speaking, the highest cap hit on every team, a lot of teams, especially teams that are in the Super Bowls, are going to be quarterbacks. So the highest cap hit percentages to win Super Bowls, highest percentage of a singular player's contract salary for that year divided by the entire salary for the entire team. Patrick Mahomes, most recent year, the highest cap hit percentage to ever win a Super Bowl. His cap hit last year was about 23%, 22.7%.
Yep.
The next highest, Tom Brady, back in 2021 with the Bucks, 13.7%. Then Tom Brady again, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning.
So we went from 22, almost 23, down to 13?
Almost 14, correct.
Wow.
So there's only been one instance in NFL history where a quarterback with a cap hit larger than 14% of his team's entire salary cap for that entire year was higher than 14%. Only one time in NFL history. And Brock Purdy obviously is nowhere near 14% of the Niners cap right now. But when he signs that mega extension deal, he will be well over 14% of the Niners cap. And just in terms of historic numbers, just in terms of these numbers, the analytics, they say that it's very, very rare for a quarterback that takes up that much of your team's cap to win a Super Bowl. The only one to do it is arguably the greatest quarterback to have ever lived, Patrick Mahomes.
That's a really interesting stat, especially as I look at SpotTrack and the current average percent of the cap at signing numbers. And I'm looking at it right now, and there are no fewer than 18 quarterbacks.
Yep.
Who are taking up more than 16% of their team's cap. So unless Brock Purdy wins the Super Bowl, or unless one of these other guys like Baker Mayfield or Geno Smith, the Shoe down in Vegas, Gardner Minshew, Trey Lance, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud's an interesting name. He's only taking up 4% of their cap.
Sam Darnold, maybe he wins
Caleb
the job in
Williams,
Minnesota.
Anthony Richardson, Jaden Daniels out with the Commanders. My point is, it feels like this trend is really kind of turning itself on its head. And I think about the Green Bay example, and I continue to use this as an example ahead of their potential run this year, because Jordan Love is now absorbing, what, 23% of the Green Bay
I'm
Packers
cap? I'm
looking
at here, 21.53.
Okay, you're right, yeah. So he's 21.53, a fifth of their cap. Thank you. It's, my kids hate when I do that. Dad, you don't know 21 Savage. 21. I just like the way he does that. But he is almost 22% of their cap, and all these other names, Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Mahomes, Hurts, Calamari, all these guys, even Dak Prescott, they're all above 20% of the cap. Yet, one of these guys has got to win it, unless Brock does. You would figure like going down the row, Cincinnati, Buffalo, those are playoff teams, you would think. Chargers should be. Baltimore will be. Kansas City, of course. Philadelphia, Arizona, whatever. That contract was a debacle or debacle, which one you prefer. Same as Deshaun Watson. Dak Prescott's always in the playoffs. And then you get to Jordan Love and Tua. Jared Goff went to the conference championship game. So it feels more and more now like teams are going the Green Bay route. Spend money on the quarterback and find cheap receiver talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know Miami didn't do that and Cincinnati didn't do that, but, you know, Buffalo is doing that. Philly didn't do that. Maybe you can pay one receiver. I don't know, but it feels more and more like you have to spend at least 20% of your cap on the quarterback or you're stuck with Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, and this is, I think, kind of what I was trying to get at earlier. And the 707, shout out to the 707, asks a good question on the Xfinity Mobile text line. At what point did QB start taking up that much of the cap? It is a more of a recent development that the numbers are this incredibly high. Generally speaking, quarterbacks have always been paid more than every other position, but it has very much exploded for quarterbacks, and the explosion hasn't been even and proportional across every other position. So it is a little bit of a newer thing. So, for example, you go back through the history of Super Bowl champions, you don't really have anybody making, like, say, 18% of the cap back in 1980 or whatever the case was. So it's a little bit different. It's more of a newer statistic, I would imagine.
And there was no cap in 1980. So, yeah. You know, it was basically you could spend as much as you want, which is how the Niners were so good so many years in a row because Eddie D was willing to open up the wallet for everybody.
But like Peyton Manning 2016, even you go back that far, he was taking up a little less than 12% of the cap. And he was, I'm sure, I'd have to go back and look. I'm sure in 16, he was probably one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, even though he was near the end of his career
at that
point. And
I think Brady is on that list a number of times. And Brady would intentionally take less in order to allow his team to spend more elsewhere, which feels like a little bit of an anomaly now. But when you look at a quarterback like Tom Brady, it would be Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers had an opportunity when he became a Jet to do something like that, and he chose to take as much as he possibly could.
Take the money and run.
And I don't begrudge any athlete for trying to get paid as much as they could or should, but the Tom Brady example is an interesting one because he did take less and they were able to have a really good team around him.
But yeah, good point. I think this is a little bit of an example of where when you have a quarterback like the Niners do, and the Texans fit into this category with CJ Stroud, and say Caleb Williams is great, the Bears will fit into this eventually with Caleb Williams. All these younger quarterbacks who are currently on rookie scale deals, when they come due for the deal, and they've shown enough to where you feel like you have to sign them, like Trevor Lawrence showed enough, although maybe didn't show enough for some of us, but showed enough to the Jaguars. But I mean, again, if you're the Jaguars, what are you going to do? Not sign them, and then who's going to play quarterback for you? So you're kind of damned if you don't. But unless you're Patrick Mahomes, you're almost kind of damned if you do. Because if you sign one of these guys, like Justin Herbert to... He's taking up over 23% of his team's cap. And what did they just have to do this offseason? They had to cut wide receivers. Keenan Allen, who was awesome last year and who was a Chargers legend, they had to just straight up cut him. They cut Mike Williams. That one was a little more understandable because he had a gigantic contract and can't stay healthy. But you cut Keenan Allen. And now Justin Herbert, by the way, dealing with a foot injury in camp, and he's going to be out for at least a couple of weeks. If your quarterback gets hurt when he's taking up that much money, you absolutely have zero chance. If your quarterback is healthy when he's taking up that much money, he better be Patrick freaking Mahomes. Like, that's the only example of a quarterback who's making more than 14% of his team's cap to win a Super Bowl. So it's almost as if, Dibs, you have to sign this guy because he's better than league average and he's better than replacement value for your team. And I want to not take a chance on another rookie. But the dream scenario is you win a Super Bowl when your quarterback is still on the rookie deal. Yeah. So I think maybe the overarching thing here that this tells us isn't necessarily that the Niners shouldn't sign Brock when the time comes. It's that you better win the freaking Super Bowl this year before you start paying Brock $60 million a year and he takes up 20%+ of your cap.
Or if you don't, even if you do win it, you're probably going to say goodbye to Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and possibly George Kittle and the rest.
And maybe Mooney Ward and...
Could be. You could still spend on the defense. You just can't spend everywhere. And you mentioned the Chargers, and I thought I would look at their depth chart because you talked about Williams leaving and Keenan Allen. They both were cut or released and the rest of it. And then I look at last year they drafted Quentin Johnson.
He was a disaster for his first year.
One year in, fine, but he wasn't in a spot where they're going to rely on him. But they used draft capital on a receiver. This year, Ladd McConkey, second Georgia. Round. Brendan Rice, seventh round. Cornelius Johnson, seventh round. They signed DJ Chark, who's
Baby
not.
Baby Chark.
That's my daughter's favorite right now. It's number one on the playlist. But DJ Chark is a guy who you don't have to pay a ton to. And you have Joshua Palmer, who was a third round pick a few years ago. So the Chargers are turning to young receivers, a la Green Bay, rookie deals, not highly paid free agents, and thinking, okay, we have an elite quarterback. He should be able to elevate them. So instead of paying Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, you pay these guys on rookie deals and you hope that it's good enough.
You hope that it's good enough. But I'll just ask you, you will not find a bigger Justin Herbert fan in the Bay Area than me?
Evan Giddings, your roommate, your very own roommate. I mean, literally.
I saw Justin Herbert play in high school. Come on.
Whoop,
whoop. I called him a high school, a couple of high school football games that he played. Yeah.
And where did he go to college?
You know where he went to college. Go Ducks. You will not find a bigger Justin Herbert fan than me, but I'll ask you, Dibs. Justin Herbert with the current cast, and obviously Jim Harbaugh is going to do a great job and arrows up because Harbaugh wins wherever he goes. Is Justin Herbert good enough with that amount of money tied up to him alone? Is he good enough to lead the Chargers to a Super Bowl with that cast?
Probably not this year, but maybe next year. And you look at the Harbaugh trajectory, it usually takes him a year to fix the roster how he wants it. And I do wonder about Justin Herbert's fantasy football stock, because one thing we know about Jim Harbaugh is he likes to run the football. So I would imagine that they start to get a big reliance on Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins and a much more physical run-first approach. And so if you're out there looking for a fantasy quarterback, Justin Herbert, to me, would be one that I would stay away from this season, not only because he doesn't have great weapons yet, but also Harbaugh is going to try to run the ball. So you may find that they look to win games in a different way, because I look at that division and I don't think that they're going to be able to outgun Kansas City, although Kansas City doesn't really sling it like they used to with their good defense now.
But they got some speedsters now.
They do.
Hollywood,
yep.
And Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, Xavier Worthy looked good and some connections with Mahomes early on. But I just wonder about the Harbaugh way of doing things. I don't think that it is going to necessarily be like it was before he came, where they were just trying to beat you through the air.
Look at your fantasy football brain kicking in. It turned the calendar turns to August, and Dibs starts thinking fantasy football.
I'm ready, and I'm conflicted because our league is so shoddily run, and there's so many things about it that I really dislike, yet I'm having FOMO, fear of missing out. So
shoddily run. That was a direct shot at our director of sports behind
yes,
the glass.
And I've said it to him on the air, off the air, around the air, in the air. Shout out Phil Collins in the air tonight. I've been very clear about the shaky nature and the inconsistent enforcement of rules. But even through it all, I'm in. I cannot afford to miss it. There's too much of a collegial thing here, you know, playing you and Guru and Steiny and all the rest of it. Willard, I got to be a part of it. Lucas, don't cut me out. Come on, Luke.
Hey, if you want, if that's it, that's all I need. Yes or no,
Lucas?
That's
I'm in. Okay,
very good.
Lock it down.
Can I Venmo you? Didn't work last year. No, I tried Venmo. To Zelle. I tried to Venmo.
Zelle works.
I ended up giving him cash.
It works out too.
Cash plays. Yeah.
Okay, always. So
took my money right to Vegas. There's no doubt.
Did you win it?
He did. He wins all the time.
Oh, he took, yeah. Well, the last couple of Vegas trips for Luke, I don't need to get into
the
Luke's personal business.
The only time that I am effective as a gambler is from March 14th to March 29th.
Cash me up one time!
The rest of the year, I'm a hot mess. Anyway, take the under tonight.
Lock it down.
Cha-ching!
I'll gladly bet the over. And I'll be rooting for points in the freaking Hall of Fame.
I know, right? Anyway, on that embarrassment of the field.
Yeah. So, okay, going back to these cap percentages, cap hit percentages for quarterbacks. Only once, and it was Mahomes last year, has a quarterback taking up more than 14% of his team's cap won the Super Bowl. So there's, as you mentioned, 18 quarterbacks currently that are taking up more than 14% of their team's cap going into this year. Really quickly, I'll just go through them. Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Jackson, Mahomes, Hurts, Murray, Watson, Prescott, Love, Lawrence, Tagovailoa, Goff, Stafford, Jones, just Daniel Jones, Cousins, Rodgers, and Carr. So that's the group. That's the group of quarterbacks that are making more than 14%. Their cap hit is more than 14% of the team's entire cap. And then you got a group below that, including Brock Purdy, including Caleb Williams, including C.J. Stroud, including Jaden Daniels, including Baker Mayfield, and including Geno Smith. If I were to take out Patrick Mahomes out of the equation, Dibs, take Patrick Mahomes out of the equation, and maybe this ultimately just becomes a question of, do you think the Niners are going to win the Super Bowl or not? Take Mahomes out of the equation. Does the Super Bowl champion have a quarterback that takes up more or less than 14% of the cap?
More. And I would take the field. And I knew you were going there. And even if you take Mahomes out, you're going to give me Allen and Jackson and Hurts.
And Burrow.
And Burrow. And
Jordan, I mean, Love.
Love and Goff, fine.
Tagovailoa.
So basically it comes down to the Niners in Kansas City or the rest of the league for the most part. Other than Houston, you would get.
Yeah, you feel like the only quarterbacks that have a real shot to win the Super Bowl that are making less than 14% of the cap are Brock Purdy and the Niners and then C.J. Stroud and the Texans.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. And, you know, Caleb Williams in Chicago, they could be better. I still don't think that they're even a playoff team. So, and you can have Bryce Young. You get Trey Lance and Zachy
Bryce Poo. Young definitely winning a Super Bowl, yeah.
Zachy Poo Wilson in Denver. If
what about Gardner Minshew?
I love the shoe, but I don't like Vegas's chances of even being higher than third in their own division. So if you take Mahomes out, I'm still taking the group of 17.
History would say it doesn't work out that way.
Right, but history, I think, is not indicative of where we are in the NFL now, where even though these quarterbacks make a ton, they're now building their teams in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, using the rookie deal, they're weaponizing teams with their rookie deals, Green Bay and the rest of them.
Just for the sake of the argument and to put a little skin in the game, I'll take the other side of that, and we'll check back in February. But, of course, we're taking Kansas City out of the equation, so maybe it's a push anyway, and the Chiefs go three-peat. We'll find out. All right, time for a break here on Willard and Dibs. On the other side, Larry Kruger, who's been covering training camp. Of course, he's been down there in Santa Clara for every single second of Niners camp. It's an off day today. We'll pick his brain about some of the bigger stories going on down inside of Niners HQ. That's coming up on the other side. It's Willard and Dibs. Grandy in for Willard. So Dibs and Grandy with you on 95.7 The Game. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7 The Game.